What role can data play in enhancing property values, meeting ambitious sustainability goals, capturing the best occupiers, and ensuring that property owners are on track in the ongoing race to net zero? And how do investors leverage data to make the right investment decisions? It's a topic we'll explore in our latest Talking Property episode. Can big data provide a big payback?
There's a building evidence base that sort of sustainable buildings are not only maintaining or increasing their value, but also being more attractive to potential occupiers and protecting that rental income over the long term.
That's Carl Brooks, the global leader of sustainability for CBRE's property management business.
We run a quite innovative, what we call the Wellbeing Index survey, that compares SCAPE residents, over 1,000 residents respond, to non-SCAPE residents, broader cohort out in private rental accommodation in the market, but similar age and demographics. And what we found is SCAPE residents tend to be better mental health, better connection to friends and family, sleep better, eat better, exercise more regularly. So they've got a range of health and wellbeing metrics that we're looking at through this Wellbeing Index survey.
And that's Chris Nunn, the General Manager of ESG for SCAPE, Australia's largest student accommodation provider. And I'm Catherine House, your podcast host. Carl, thanks so much for joining, as I know it's quite early in the day for you, given that you're based in London.
No problem at all. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
And Chris, I'm delighted you could also join us to provide your insights, not just from SCAPE, but from your 24 years as a sustainability expert. From looking at your LinkedIn, I can see that you also have a London connection, having completed your Masters of Sustainability at the London School of Economics.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here. I lived in London for 6 years. I did my master's at the LSE in 2005 and I worked for a large multinational architecture, engineering, project management cost consultancy in London for 5 years as their sustainability associate director.
And not missing the London weather?
No. Sydney weather's much preferred, but London certainly has its advantages.
Absolutely. So look, let's jump into it. Data and the ability to have those clear data insights. It's one of the huge challenges that property owners face on their net zero journeys. So how do owners collect and effectively analyze sustainability data and then leverage it to make the right investment decisions, such as, you know, do they hold and enhance an asset or do they sell? Carl, perhaps I could start with you. I know CBRE invested last year in DeepKey, which is an entrepreneurial data company based in Paris that monitors billions of square feet of real estate in about 65 countries to help optimize sustainability performance. You've really been at the forefront in deploying DeepKey to CBRE's global property management clients, and Australia is one of the next cabs off the rank. So why is sustainability data such a key focus area? And why has it been so hard to collate data in the past?
So I think there are many ways of answering that. I mean, I think sustainability data is such a key focus now because, you know, we all understand the kind of importance of sustainability performance within real estate. Thinking specifically around the environmental impacts, you know, most of our clients are setting net zero targets now to try and mitigate the worst impacts of climate change. In order to do that, we need to make sure we know exactly what our buildings are consuming. Globally, the real estate sector is responsible for around 40% of those emissions. So it's really important that we as a sector look at this area seriously to ensure that we've got the right plans in place to minimize the impact of the kind of properties that we own and manage. Why it's been so hard to collate in the past is because by definition it's such a broad field, it's such a broad term. Sustainability covers everything from energy and utilities to waste to biodiversity to social value to health and safety, all of these different kind of aspects there. So in collating sustainability data, you're bringing it in from multiple sources, even within each of those categories. You know, from a, you know, like a utility perspective, that could be from smart metering, it could be from invoices, it could be from meter reads taken on site. So trying to kind of corral and aggregate data into one place means that the kind of quality is inconsistent and the ability to bring it all into one lens is a bit of a challenge. So really what we've been trying to do with DeepKey is to use DeepKey as a funnel to bring all of those disparate sources together to bring some clarity to the picture we're trying to form around performance.
It's a good point that you make about this. And I know, Chris, sustainability is a really huge focus area for Scape. And I know you've developed your own relationship with DeepKey after hearing about the CBRE tie-up. Can you talk me through why data is so critical for Scape and the impact that you're finding, you know, that this better data is having on your overall performance?
Yes, ESG data is critical to a lot of different aspects of managing a real estate portfolio, including Scape, which specializes in student accommodation and just getting into the build to rent space as well. I think perhaps ESG data and reporting systems were more common in commercial real estate companies managing office portfolios. I used to work in such a portfolio, and office and retail and industrial were the mainstays. But now we're seeing the same level of ESG expectations moving into alternative asset classes, including residential for rent. So it's the same global institutional investors who invest in office, retail and industrial as invest in Scape. We've got a large cohort of very leading multinational investors from Europe, Canada, Middle East, et cetera. And they all apply those same high ESG expectations from their experience in commercial real estate to investing in the living space. So our investors certainly expect rich ESG data and reporting. And also there's an internal drive, of course, for asset optimization and minimizing utility costs. But I think also, and what attracted me to DeepKey actually, was the ability to create bespoke asset attribute data and surveys that can capture all of the different types of information about the portfolio and the assets that we need to report to our investors.
So I guess access to capital, maybe that's where we could get to now. That is a huge focus area right now with the way that market is tracking. And being green can help with that. Chris, I know that Scape last year struck a $1.4 billion sustainability-linked loan where you'll be able to convert that debt into sustainable financing in the future as you lower your emissions and reduce your waste. So what savings will that deliver to Scape, and how integral was data to getting that deal across the line?
ESG data is absolutely critical and is the foundation of a sustainability-linked loan such as the one that Scape struck with its consortia of lenders for our core program on that $1.47 billion debt facility. The interest rate discount was 0.05% or 5 basis points, and that equates to, you know, a $750,000 interest rate saving every year that we hit the sustainability-linked loan ESG targets. And we chose, through a series of discussions with our lenders and with a second party opinion provider who validates the sustainability link framework being sufficiently material and ambitious, we chose two ESG targets. One was switching to 100% renewable electricity across the portfolio by the end of the loan tenor in 3 years, and also having all the core program assets rated using Green Star Performance, which is our domestic Australian equivalent to BREEAM in use or LEED for existing buildings. It rates the operational performance of a building in its use phase. And we're working with CBRE actually on that, who's performing the Green Star Performance ratings, as well as our energy water waste audits that give us the pathway of improvements underlying that. And so that has already converted to a sustainability loan, and our year one targets last year were met. So we entered our renewable electricity contract with a large wind farm operator. Iberdrola, the largest wind farm operator in the world, has a big wind farm here in Australia called the Capital Wind Farm, 140 megawatt wind energy plant. And we chose wind rather than solar, which you might think, oh, Australia, sun, you know, surely it's solar. But our load profile tends to actually be more at night because we have a continuous 24/7 operating environment. So wind fits our load shape a little bit better. So we've done the SLL. So we've unlocked the SLL for year one. Now I've got a second year target. There's year by year targets. I've got to get more of the assets across to the renewable electricity contract and more rated, and ultimately get there next year for the whole portfolio. So, yeah, so that's a bit of an overview of the sustainability linked loan at Scape.
I mean, so $750,000 interest rate saving, that's pretty significant. Carl, do you have any other stories that you can share, re the ways in which you've seen clients use data to improve their bottom line?
No, absolutely. And I say there are three areas, one of which Chris has covered, there around access to capital through sustainability-linked loans and better sort of terms of finance. The other two areas that we're seeing is around the kind of asset value itself, protecting or kind of increasing asset value. So, you know, one of the analyses that we do through the DeepKey platform is to look at building performance data overlaid over the CRREM pathway. So CRREM is the Carbon Risk Real Estate Monitor. And that's really like an initiative that grew out of Europe, but it's mapped across countries globally now, which looks at what a Paris-aligned climate target is, so i.e. to achieve net zero by 2050. And by overlaying the data on that pathway, we can demonstrate to clients the point at which their building would potentially become stranded, for example, i.e. the point at which it is no longer tracking its carbon emissions to the downward pathway towards 2050 that the Paris Agreement demands. So what that means is we can work with clients to prioritize where and when to make investments in the performance of those buildings to ensure that they're not sort of, you know, kind of them focusing on the wrong buildings, where, you know, if buildings are performing well, then let's leave those alone for now, but let's focus on those which are likely to be impacted were there to be a sale in the offing. So that's kind of one area around protecting the kind of client's bottom line by protecting asset value. The second area is related to the sort of NOI of the buildings themselves, so the net operating income there. And that's all around the operational efficiency of the building, ensuring that we're able to keep cost of occupancy down and therefore, alongside all the sustainability features, make those buildings more attractive than maybe the building next door. So we are seeing more evidence now of green buildings, sustainable buildings being more attractive to potential occupiers. And our own research within CBRE last year was a big study of LEED certified buildings in the US and the fact that there was like a double digit increase in rental premiums at those buildings due to the increased sustainability performance of those properties. So again, there's a building evidence base that sort of sustainable buildings are not only maintaining or increasing their value, but also being more attractive to potential occupiers and protecting that rental income over the long term. So those are sort of two more examples to kind of add to that point.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. Like, you know, everyone wants to do the right thing, but when you can actually see those bottom line savings as well from an investment point of view, I think that really does, you know, build that base case.
Yeah, I agree. There's a study in a similar vein from Australia that looked at 350 properties in the office sector. And the five-star Neighbours properties had a 9% value premium above non-rated buildings. They had better rental returns, lower vacancy, lower outgoings, and reduced incentives. And flip side, I think there was a real like green premium and also a brown discount. So the lower rated buildings had 10% lower vals and 9% lower rents as well. So there really was that correlation in Australia between green building ratings and core property metrics.
It's interesting you mentioned Neighbours, Chris, because I think that's getting exported to the UK now, I believe, Carl.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So we've been looking at Neighbours with interest for a number of years now in the UK. I mean, I think Europe has been sort of, you know, pretty advanced in its kind of thinking around sustainability. And we've been very well supported by strong legislative framework from the European Union, as well as the UK Climate Change Act back in 2008. But I think when it comes to the other lever we can pull, which is around building ratings, you know, Neighbours has been one that's really sort of shown huge value in driving change in the market. You know, obviously, a lot of property in Australia is kind of local authority, local government led, and by sort of like defining a minimum star rating, that's really helped accelerate improvement in that sector. So it's like an interesting case study of how a building rating system, when widely adopted, can really sort of drive change upwards. And through our industry work as part of the Better Buildings Partnership in the UK, they've brought Neighbours across as part of their Design for Performance standard, and then Neighbours Energy UK as well, which we're just starting to look at for the office stock in the UK as well. And it's really important to kind of look at all of the different sort of ranking and rating systems to see which one is going to sort of have the most kind of impact in raising standards. But Neighbours is an example of one that's really sort of translated from theory into operations, and one that we're hoping has the same impact in the UK and across Europe, perhaps.
Where would you sort of place Australia in that whole sustainability conversation? Like, how are we tracking relative to other countries, do you think?
We have a phenomenal team working in Australia. I sort of work very closely with Ali Balakumar in our kind of Australian property management business, and he's really sort of leading the sort of mobilization of the DeepKey platform. But he's also working with a number of sort of like, you know, large kind of account clients who are setting very sort of robust targets around sustainability. And there's probably as much of a focus in Australia as there is in Europe at the moment, and an awful lot of really great work happening over there. And what's really interesting as well is we're learning an awful lot from Australia on the sort of social value side, the kind of placemaking, community engagement, health and well-being kind of aspects, which seem to be much more kind of advanced in some ways in the Australian market. And the beauty of my role and the sort of, what I'm really grateful for is being able to learn from all of these kind of different teams, from across Europe, the Americas, and kind of Asia Pacific as well, and try and sort of, cross-pollinate these ideas and best practice to make sure we can bring up those regions who are maybe lagging and transfer sort of best practice to other regions too. So it's a really privileged position that I'm in.
Hmm. That whole idea of social value, is that something that you're looking at, Chris, when you're rolling out what you're doing at Scape around ESG?
We certainly have a massive focus on the S, the social and governance aspects of ESG, certainly. We run a quite innovative, what we call the Wellbeing Index survey, that compares Scape residents, over 1,000 residents respond, to non-Scape residents, broader cohort out in private rental accommodation in the market, but similar age and demographics. And what we found is Scape residents tend to be better mental health, better connection to friends and family, sleep better, eat better, exercise more regularly. So they've got a range of health and wellbeing metrics that we're looking at through this wellbeing index survey, through which we can sort of demonstrate that there is a health and wellbeing benefit to being a Scape resident, and all the programs that we're running around community building, environmental education, engagement on waste management, other health and wellbeing initiatives, access to public transport, day trips, all the great engagements that we do at Scape with our residents to make them feel part of a community, actually do have a measurable material health and wellbeing impact.
So perhaps just segueing to something, and maybe it's an elephant in the room, maybe not, but Carl, in this current sort of, still tough economic climate, do you think that some landlords are potentially deprioritising sustainability initiatives?
I think conflicting priorities are coming in as opposed to anything being deprioritized necessarily. I mean, I think for some of the themes that we've been discussing so far today around kind of value, there is a sort of real clear benefit to maintaining sort of sustainability as a priority. And in fact, just this week in the UK, the boss of the CBI, the Confederation of British Industry, came out to say that you really can't be pro-growth without being pro-green, and sort of like saying that actually the question isn't can we afford to go for net zero, the question can we afford not to. So the longer we leave things, the more expensive things become. So I think there is still a sort of move, particularly with our sort of like, kind of large institutional investor clients, to who kind of recognize that sustainability is just good business. So I think our challenge, and going back to the original sort of question around data, is to sort of show clients who maybe aren't yet fully sort of on board with sustainability as being a value creator, to really kind of show them what the risk of not looking at sustainability is by showing them where the risk sits in their portfolio and what the impact of that might be, but also what the opportunities attached to sustainability are. So again, data really forms the kind of foundation and the building blocks for us to keep portfolios under constant triage and identify to clients how they can better mitigate risk and better exploit opportunities as they arise by taking decisions with a good foundation of knowledge, as opposed to just putting their finger in the air and guessing roughly what trade the wind's blowing,
Yeah. So as an extension of that, I guess, how will not having these initiatives impact the ability, do you think, Carl, to attract occupiers in the future? And I'll shoot to you next, Chris, on this front from a student perspective. But Carl, what do you think in terms of your office occupiers?
Yeah, no, look, I mean, we're seeing kind of social demographics is a really sort of interesting kind of area of study to look at what the future office looks like, what these future workplace trends are. We sort of talk about, the impact of the pandemic, changing working practices, and actually sort of changing almost working expectations from the kind of generations who are coming into the workplace now. And these are our future leaders, right? So the kind of culture that they're setting, or the expectations they're setting, will eventually become workplace culture. So how we respond to that is going to be really key. And we are seeing that there's a lot more interest, a lot more hits on the parts of CBRE's website, for example, on our sustainability element. So we know that people who are looking to come to work for us, and I'm sure it's the same for other companies everywhere, that they're wanting to make sure that they're working for companies who have a shared value proposition that they have, and they're wanting to work somewhere where they feel they can do some good or certainly do less harm than maybe they could have done before. So it's a really important aspect of the war for talent, really, just to make sure that we can show that we are offering a workplace which supports them and their needs, but also has a sort of wider, stronger sense of corporate citizenship around the impact and double materiality of the business, you know, the impact on the environment and society, as well as how society and environment impacts them. So we're seeing a lot of interest in this and a lot of kind of expectation now from the younger generations.
So I guess by extension, Chris, you know, we've talked about office occupiers, but how much is that playing into where students are making their decisions? Are they really wanting to be in buildings that have these, you know, high green sustainability standards?
Yeah, this is a generation that knows about climate change, that's grown up with that as part of their psychological baggage, if you like. These yes. people do definitely understand broader environmental and global social issues. And there's evidence to say that they're giving effect to those values when they choose a place to live as a student. A study from 2023 found that 61% of students thought that when they're choosing their accommodation provider's commitment to reducing their impact on the environment was a factor in where to live, 61% saying that, 17% saying they would be willing to pay extra for technology that made their building more environmentally friendly, and 13% saying they would pay extra to live in a carbon neutral building. So yeah, quite interesting insights there into a small cohort actually very strongly indicating that they have a preference and would pay more for carbon neutral and technology, energy efficiency, solar panels, etc., that improve their impact on the environment. And the bulk of the respondents to that survey saying, look, it's one factor among many, but I definitely thought about it. And yeah, all other things being equal, that could have been the difference between me coming to Scape and going somewhere else. So we are seeing evidence in the market of that. And we do an annual survey, which I mentioned earlier, the Wellbeing Index, and we ask a lot of ESG themed questions as part of that. And we do see that concern about indoor environmental quality, 41% saying that they're interested in fresh air ventilation and that they want to make sure they have enough fresh air, 40% concerned about indoor air quality and pollutants. You know, a lot of our residents coming from China, India, places where air quality is not as high as Australia, and wanting to make sure that they're going to have a comfortable, safe, healthy indoor environment, that it's not going to be too noisy. That was a big factor. 39% saying that's a factor. 41% saying they want greater access to green space, and some people being concerned about being too hot or too cold in their room. So standard sort of environmental comfort conditions. So absolutely, we are seeing that evidence from international studies like the one I cited earlier and our own research of our residents when they're staying with us.
Very different from my university days. There was a lot of noise and probably not very good indoor air quality.
No, that's right. And I think that's one of the benefits of purpose-built student accommodation, you know, particularly for parents as well as the student themselves. There's substantial anxiety around moving to a new country. Maybe English isn't your first language. You're facing into first year at uni, exam pressure, socially dislocated. And we at Scape believe that it's our pastoral care to have a wraparound service. We call it Scape TLC, Tender Loving Care, you know, build that connection to others so they've got friends within the building, day trips out to nature so they've got a connection with nature, curated experience around cooking classes and fitness and nutrition and drug and alcohol education and respectful relationships around diversity, equity, inclusion. So that's a full program of engagements, activations, community building, which you have in a purpose-built student accommodation community that you don't have in private rental accommodation. And that's really our main competitor is, should I just go and rent in the broader market or should I stay at a purpose-built student accommodation? We see more and more people seeing the benefit of purpose-built student accommodation when they, particularly when they move countries to study overseas.
Yeah, Scape TLC, I like it. So if we zero back in on data and why it's so important, there's been a huge focus recently on greenwashing. How important is the data piece when we're considering the risk of greenwashing, or I guess by extension, people greenhushing?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And that kind of move from greenwashing to greenhashing as well, where people are almost so scared of making claims which are false, they'd rather not make any claims at all. So I think both of them have sort of negative impacts. But I think really what we've always said for an awful long time is that the data gives us the sort of insights to kind of tell us how a building or a project has kind of performed. And actually, you know, I've always kind of said and tried to instill in the teams that I work with that actually is as important to understand why things don't work as opposed to promote and identify where things do work. So I think as long as we're sort of like, you know, using data to have a clear plan of where we're going, we shouldn't be afraid of poor performance as long as there's a plan to then correct that performance. So again, it comes down to as we get more clarity over data, more coverage, more sort of, you know, like broader data sets, better data sets, of course, the claims that we were making 5 years ago have been restated 5 years later. That's not to say that we were greenwashing 5 years ago. It just means to say that we've got much more visibility over performance now. And I think that that's absolutely fine to kind of own that and kind of admit that that's the case. So I think provided it's underpinned with sound understanding of performance and sound data, then we should fear greenwashing because that is misleading, but we shouldn't necessarily be green hushing performance if we think it's going to be received negatively in our peer group, you know.
I think there's three antidotes to the risk of greenwashing. One is to make clear and precise claims with no exaggeration, ambiguity, or lack of precision. What have you done and what measurable outcomes have you achieved? And I think if you stick to that formula, that's important. Obviously, that has to be based on the second point, which is high quality data. And we're using DeepKey to get much better visibility over our data completeness. There's a good feature in DeepKey which sort of shows at the asset and portfolio view what percent complete your data points are across a range of metrics, what carbon factors have been used. So we've got full transparency over our data so we can make those precise claims. And then thirdly, aligning to global standards. Like if you are reporting in accordance with GRI and following those, the Global Reporting Initiative, and you're following the guidance documents and aligning to other international standards like GRESB or ISSB and TNFD and TCFD, of course. But as ESG managers, we have to be across the evolution of all of those global standards and be doing the jigsaw puzzle of which of those is asking me what and what underlying data do I need to comprehensively report against each of those global and local standards. So that is a big part of avoiding greenwashing, is to be across all the global standards and report in accordance with standards and then have your data and disclosures verified against those disclosures. So I think they're the three things, you know, the clear, precise claims, high quality data, alignment to international standards.
And so maybe the final question for you both, and Carl, I heard our global head of property management talk about a CBRE mantra of being mean, lean and clean. I quite like that. Can you talk me through that? And do you think that data is pointing towards owners seeing a brown discount if they don't heighten their sustainability focus?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And mean, lean and clean is one that we use a lot because it's really around sort of, you know, recognizing that there's an awful lot that we can do first and foremost through our management. I mean, I think we're sort of seeing property management taking a much more prominent role in the ultimate sort of performance of our clients, because actually good management practice, i.e. being kind of mean with how energy is being used on site, is the first step of any sort of energy efficiency or sustainability project plan. It's very easy to kind of jump straight to the high capital, blue sky, big ticket items, but there's an awful lot that we can do just through good sound management. Lean is really around then when you're specifying projects, and that could be large capital works, but it can also be routine replacements of kind of lamps or filters or, you know, all the things that kind of form part of our planned preventative maintenance processes, around making sure that we're choosing the kind of best, most practicable sustainability or efficiency option there. So being lean with how we're using energy. And then finally, it's then looking at, okay, what can we do to either procure renewable supplies to the building to, you know, to kind of remove emissions from our kind of scope 2 kind of data set, or it could be around specifying on-site renewables as well. So it's kind of taking that sort of pragmatic approach where we're first of all focusing on the things that we can control, then the things that we can influence before we then maybe recommend to our clients around sort of capital and improvements to those properties. when it comes to the sort of premium and discount thing, I know Chris kind of touched on this earlier, and we are sort of seeing more evidence around rental premiums and value increasing around green building features. But I think there is a huge risk in the market around this kind of brown discounting and almost creating like a two-tier market where sustainable buildings become the norm, that becomes the standard expectation. So then you create a secondary market of buildings, which maybe because of their design, and again, you're thinking about the differences between Australia perhaps and Europe, you know, we have a lot of very old buildings in Europe which are still in use. You think about all of the buildings in central Paris, for example. I mean, these are incredibly old buildings which are, you know, like have high heritage features which may be more challenging to treat. And because of that, they may suffer a brown discount potentially because it's just harder to get them to align with the kind of energy efficiency expectations that a net zero target points towards. So I think we will see sort of more evidence of brown discounts on hard to treat buildings or change of use, for example, as well as those higher performing buildings commanding ever higher rents.
Any thoughts on that, Chris?
We are doing things like for our investors, uploading our entire data set of 2 years worth of utility month by month and providing them with literally every invoice. Like we have investors who are asking for that level of disclosure at the moment. I think they're doing their own analysis, trying to find that green alpha, trying to validate that their investment in Scape is going to give them higher returns. So I think we are seeing both ends of the spectrum, more and more ESG related due diligence and more trawling through ESG data, hunting for green alpha.
Look, thank you so much for joining today, Carl. I think it's going to be really interesting as, you know, we do deploy Deep Key more broadly in Australia. I think there's just so much desire and demand for that data that can help people make better investment decisions. And Chris, great to see that Scape is really at the forefront here in what you're rolling out across your portfolio. So, and to see that you're getting those real returns, it's not just ticking a box, you know, you're sort of getting those real savings coming through at the same time. So such a pleasure to have you on the podcast, Carl, and enjoy the rest of your day. I know your daughter has a big night tonight, going off to a prom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll be seeing her off later on. It'll be lots of fun.
Fabulous. And Chris, thank you so much for joining as well. It was really a pleasure to have you on the program.
Absolute pleasure.
To our listeners, thanks for tuning in. If you like the show, you can subscribe through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast hosting platform. We'd also love it if you could rate or review Talking Property to help spread the word. And if you have any questions or feedback, you can drop me a note at any time via talkingproperty@cbre.com. Until next time.